Good morning. In some of the headlines, Ketchikan City Councilmember Jack Shea has resigned his seat after being arrested on 10 counts of possession of child pornography. Shea is a former mayor of both the Ketchikan Gateway Borough and City of Ketchikan, a former member of the Ketchikan School Board, and past president of the Alaska Municipal League. He also served for a time as head of the Alaska Division of Employment Security here in Juneau. The 80-year-old Shea was arrested Friday night after a computer shop worker contacted Ketchikan police about images he reportedly found on Shea's computer. The business was required by law to report the child pornography to police. Deputy Chief Josh Dossett says Shea had taken the computer to the shop because it would not print.
The tech put the printer and the computer together and turned them on, and when they were hooked up and turned on, the printer began printing out pictures that were already queued in the computer. Several of those pictures were of child pornography.
Dossett says police officers obtained a warrant and searched Shea's computer and residence. He says child pornographic images were found on top of a printer in a home office. Officers also found other media.
I have a detective and two officers working this case full-time, basically working their way through the different media.
Shea was arraigned in Ketchikan Superior Court on Saturday morning and pled innocent. He was released on $30,000 bail. Ketchikan City Mayor Lou Williams III says Shea was not forced to resign his seat.
If you're convicted, you'd have to step down, but right now he didn't have to, but I imagine he wants to deal with the circumstances, and it's more or less of a distraction.
Williams says the Ketchikan City Council will appoint a replacement and expects the city to begin advertising for applicants soon. Shea is a well-known figure in Ketchikan who has steeped himself in the city's political establishment there. He's also a founder of First City Players and has been a Grand Marshal of the community's 4th of July parade. Alaska's Supreme Court will hear a case at a Fairbanks High School next month. The December 5th hearing for a local case will be held at Lathrop High School as part of a program called Supreme Court Live. Justice Daniel Winfrey says the program offers students the opportunity to see the justice system in action.
A real live case with real live attorneys and real live parties, and our court will be there, and high school kids from all around the area will be coming to watch.
Winfrey says the case to be heard at Lathrop involves a false arrest claim and an alleged civil rights violation. And he says after listening to oral arguments December 5th, students will also get to talk with attorneys and justices.
It gives the kids a chance to learn about our branch of government. They hear a lot about the legislature. They hear a lot about the executive branch through the governor. They don't often hear about what we do. And it gives them an opportunity to see us at work and know what our one-third of the rail of government is all about. And that's a real important goal for our court, and we'd like to have as many kids as possible come out and see us.
The Supreme Court Live program has already been held in Anchorage and here in Juneau in the 3 years since it was started by Chief Justice Walter Carpinetti. Sea Alaska Director and former CEO Byron Malott says the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is a work in progress. Malott kicked off Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's annual Native American History Month lecture series last Friday by calling the landmark piece of federal legislation unfinished business.
It's unfinished in the sense that it has been amended many, many times in order to be responsive to changing public policy, the changing aspirations of Native peoples themselves, but it has also big chunks of it that need to be rationalized and dealt with.
Sea Alaska is one of 12 regional Native corporations created by ANCSA in 1971, which received land to settle the various Aboriginal claims of Alaska Native people. The settlement also included compensation of nearly $1 billion that was split between the companies. A 13th corporation formed for so-called landless Natives. It received a monetary settlement but no land. Malott hopes ANCSA will be amended in the future to allow land swaps between Native corporations, tribes, and the federal government.
There are Native lands in Native ownership that probably should best be in public ownership. There are public lands that, if you really look at them, have more the attributes of Native places. And the biggest one of all to me is how do we keep those lands which are now essentially corporate assets. Even though they are protected in modest ways, they are not tribal lands in the legal sense, even though we believe they are tribal lands in the Native sense.
Malott did not touch on it in his speech, but legislation sponsored by Alaska's congressional delegation would allow Sea Alaska to complete its ANCSA entitlement by choosing land outside of the Act's original boundaries. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute lecture series continues next Monday. Tlingit and Haida Central Council President Edward Thomas will describe the interrelationships between Alaska Native corporations and tribes. And commercial salmon catches fell short of predictions this year, but higher salmon prices more than made up for it. That's according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which just came out with its preliminary report on ex-vessel value for this season. A $603 million salmon harvest is at least the third all-time most valuable since 1975. Only 176 million salmon harvested, though. That's the ninth biggest overall harvest since 1960, and about 27 million salmon short of predictions for this year. High pink and chum prices credited for the increase in value. Southeast Alaska at $203 million worth of salmon this year even surpassed Bristol Bay. Only $137 million in fish hauled in there this season. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for scattered snow and rain showers this morning, then a chance of rain and snow this afternoon. Some winds out of the east to about 10 miles an hour and high temperature about 40 degrees. Low tonight should just be a hair above freezing with some rain and snow likely late tonight. And then a slight chance of rain for most of the rest of the week with a little bit of snow mixed in during the nighttime hours with temperatures between 33 and 44 degrees. Currently at the Juneau Airport, 35 degrees. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, a small plane crashed south of Bethel, but appears everyone walked away. The crash occurred last night about 6:30 near an airstrip south of Bethel. Clint Johnson with the National Transportation Safety Board says the aircraft was a Cessna 207 operated by Hagelin Era Aviation. Witnesses say the plane took off, banked left, and then went down. It appears the plane hit a frozen pond, bounced up, and then flipped over. The NTSB says there were six people on board. All of them survived, although there were some injuries. The U.S. Army has formally charged an Alaska-based soldier with attempted espionage, issuing false statements and other charges. Specialist William Colton Millay of Owensboro, Kentucky, was charged yesterday through the military justice system. He was arrested October 28th at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage after an investigation by the Army and the FBI. Army officials say the 22-year-old never transmitted any information and that he was being observed before any damage could have occurred. Officials say there is no connection with the case involving Army analyst Bradley Manning, who is suspected of disclosing secret intelligence to WikiLeaks. Millay was assigned to the 164th Military Police Company. Most members were deployed to Afghanistan in March, but Millay was in the company's rear detachment that stayed behind. The Lake and Peninsula Borough will seek to consolidate two court cases aimed at negating a ballot initiative that could stop the Pebble Mine. Borough voters last month approved a ban on large-scale extraction activity that would destroy or degrade salmon habitat. It was aimed at Pebble, a massive copper and gold prospect near the headwaters of Bristol Bay. The Pebble Limited Partnership sued to block the vote. Attorney Matt Singer said at the scheduling hearing yesterday before Superior Court Judge John Suttock that the plaintiffs will amend their complaint. The attorney general also sued, claiming the initiative conflicts with state authority to govern minerals management. Senator Mark Megich cited his frustration at the lack of progress on getting Alaska natural gas pipeline built as he introduced legislation yesterday in Washington, D.C. His bill would boost prospects of a so-called stub-to-hub line. That is a shorter pipeline stub that could be built from the North Slope to a hub like Fairbanks, with the plan of eventually extending the line from there. As it is, there are federal benefits such as loan guarantees and expedited permitting timelines, but only for a gas line that reaches the Canadian border. Begich's bill would give the same incentives to a gas line that goes only part way, with the eventual plan of getting gas to outside markets.
The idea here is to ensure that as the state kind of reconsiders how it's focused on a gas line, that we still put into place some opportunities that the federal government will have in this process. One is to expedite the regulatory process, to streamline the regulatory process, to kind of cut the red tape so whatever gas line they decide to move forward on, that the federal government's not going to be blocking it or be be the stumbling block in getting it to market.
Senator Begich's bill would also give the Federal Pipeline Coordinator's Office a role in working on a smaller gas project. Right now, that D.C. and Anchorage-based office can only help with a gas line headed to Canada. Federal Coordinator Larry Pursley says as long as FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, sees a smaller stub project inside of Alaska as leading to an eventual bigger project, then his office could be involved.
Gives him more options. It says if you're only going to build part of it, but the Federal Commission says eventually it will be part of the entire project, you can get the benefits, even if it's a smaller project, even if it's only half a project.
Pursley says he doesn't see this as a signal that hopes of a gas pipeline through Canada to the lower 48 are dimming. He says that's still the goal, but Pursley says he is sensing that Alaskans and their political leaders are grasping at whatever they can to move things forward.
I guess what this signals is increasing frustration, you might even call it desperation, on the part of Alaskans who are saying, give me a pipe, anywhere, any size, give me a piece of steel that holds gas. Get something done.
Last week, some members of Senator Begich's Democratic Party called for a halt to federal subsidies for oil and gas companies as a way to save money and said they would probably not support more financial incentives for an Alaska gas line project. But Senator Begich says the loan guarantees aren't the highest priorities in his bill. Instead, he says expediting the process and having regulatory certainty are more important.
That is the ultimate at the end of the day. If we can, you know, knock down these regulations, get it focused on bringing the product to market, that's what I'm going to be highly focused on. So if they have heartburn over one piece, we'll deal with that. But at the end of the day, I hope these folks, as they get into their big SUVs and head home tonight or flip on their power switch to light up their house, that they think about where that's all coming from.
Senator Begich isn't confining his focus to what Washington can do to get a gas line moving. In September, he wrote to Governor Sean Parnell encouraging the state to look at creating its own loan guarantee to give some incentives to the project. That might get some attention if Congress balks at expanding the federal loan guarantees. And a severe Bering Sea storm has the potential for widespread damage when it hits western Alaska. National Weather Service forecasters expect 55-mile-an-hour winds with higher gusts tonight and tomorrow over the west coast. Gusts to 70 miles an hour can be expected along the Chukotka Peninsula near Kotzebue, 75 miles an hour near St. Lawrence Island and the Bering Strait coast. Forecasters say near hurricane-force winds will generate 20-foot seas over the Chukchi Sea and 25-foot seas over the northern Bering Sea. Winds will push large amounts of water into Norton Sound, raising sea levels 8 to 9 feet above normal tonight through tomorrow. That may cause beach erosion and flooding along Norton Sound and may push Norton Bay ice onshore. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for winds only to about 10 miles an hour out of the east for today, with some scattered rain and snow showers mainly this morning and then some rain tonight, with some rain and snow likely late tonight. But accumulation of snow expected to be less than an inch. Temperatures today between 33 and 40 degrees, with some rain, possibly a little bit of snow mixed in for the rest of the week. Currently 35 degrees at the Juneau Airport. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this news update. Kara Heitz, a science and health teacher at Cordova Junior Senior High School, has been named Alaska Teacher of the Year. The announcement was made during an Association of Alaska School Boards conference in Anchorage over the weekend. Scott McKim, a science, math, and applied technology teacher in Anchorage, was named Alternate Teacher of the Year. Education Department says Heitz had found her calling as a teacher while working with high schoolers as a medical student. Heitz has a bachelor's degree in zoology and completed coursework toward a medical doctorate at MCP Hahnemann School of Medicine in Philadelphia. She's taught for 10 years. Perks for Teacher of the Year include technology for their schools and a scholarship to pursue an advanced degree. Here in Juneau, breakfast programs at four elementary schools will help fill the void left by the upcoming closure of early morning child care programs. The school district's rally director is working with the parents of 22 youngsters enrolled in the 7 to 8 a.m. sessions at five schools. Wayne Hickson says it'll be hard to replace rally for the first half hour, but breakfast programs begin at Mendenhall River, Glacier Valley, Riverbend, and Gastineau at 7:30, and school starts at 8 o'clock. Hickson says there's been a steady decline in students enrolled in the program since 2003, with a big drop-off when Juneau grade school switched from a 9 a.m. start time to 8 a.m.
The East Have Elementary School starting at 9, and during that time we had about 160-some kids in the morning program across the district. Then with moving it up to 8 o'clock, we see what the fallout is, where you have like, you know, 20-some kids in service.
As previously reported, the rally program is designed to pay for itself, but early morning enrollment at each of the five schools ranges from 2 to 6 kids. Hickson says it takes 12 students for a rally session to be cost-effective. Only the downtown Harborview rally, which has 16 students, will be saved because it breaks even. He says eliminating the first hour at the other schools will help stem the loss.
Right now, we're hoping to get to a break-even status. Currently, we're losing about $11,000 a month.
Hickson says it costs $1.2 million to $1.3 million a year to operate all of the rally programs in the district, including the summer sessions. Rally stands for Recreation, Arts, Learning, and Leadership for Youth. It has before and after school sessions for kindergarten through fifth graders. No changes will be made to the program until January. Sea Alaska Director and former CEO Byron Malott says Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is a work in progress. Malott kicked off the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's annual Native American History Month lecture series last Friday by calling the landmark piece of federal legislation unfinished business.
It's unfinished in the sense that it has been amended many, many times in order to be responsive to changing public policy, the changing aspirations of Native peoples themselves, but it has also big chunks of it that need to be rationalized and dealt with.
Sea Alaska is one of 12 regional Native corporations created by ANCSA in 1971, which each received land to settle various Aboriginal claims of Alaska Native people. The settlement also included compensation of nearly $1 billion that was split between the companies. A 13th corporation was later formed for so-called landless natives. It received a monetary settlement but no land. Malott hopes ANCSA will be amended in the future to allow land swaps between Native corporations, tribes, and the federal government.
There are Native lands in Native ownership that probably should best be in public ownership. There are public lands that, if you really look at them, have more the attributes of Native places. And the biggest one of all to me is, how do we keep those lands, which are now essentially corporate assets, even though they are protected in modest ways, they are not tribal lands in the legal sense, even though we believe they are tribal lands in the Native sense.
Malott did not touch on it in his speech, but legislation sponsored by Alaska's congressional delegation would allow Sea Alaska to complete its ANCSA entitlement by choosing land outside of the Act's original boundaries. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's lecture series continues next Monday. Tlingit and Haida Central Council President Edward Thomas will describe the interrelationships between Alaska Native corporations and tribes. The 2011 statewide salmon harvest is currently the third most valuable since 1975, according to a report issued yesterday from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The estimated value of this summer's catch of $603 million is third behind 1988 and 2010. But Commercial Fisheries Division Assistant Director Jaron Bruce says it won't stay that way for very long.
We expect that once we get the final price information in from processors and buyers, and we'll get that next spring, that it'll actually become the second highest.
While harvest volume varied from area to area and species to species, prices were strong throughout the state, particularly for pink and chum salmon. Here in Southeast, for example, pinks average 42 cents a pound and chums 81 cents. Bruce looks at this year's good prices as a continuation of an upward trend over the past decade.
The recognition in the marketplace that Alaska's commercial salmon fisheries are sustainable, that it's a wild, natural food, I think those have been important programs, and also the collapse of the Chilean salmon farming industry due to a virus a few years ago, and they're still recovering from that, played a part as well.
Southeast Alaska's combination of big harvests and high prices produced the most valuable salmon harvest for any region in the state this year, estimated at $203 million. Nearly half of that came from a big pink harvest of 59 million fish. Bristol Bay is usually the most valuable fishery in the state, but catches there fell short of projections this summer. Bristol Bay had the second highest value at $137 million. Prince William Sound had the third at an estimated $101 million. In total, Alaska fishermen landed 176 million salmon in 2011, and that was the ninth largest catch since 1960, but well below the preseason forecast of 203 million fish. Weather forecast for the capital city area calls for some cloudy skies and some scattered rain and snow showers for most of this morning, and then just a chance of rain and snow later on this afternoon, and then rain for most of the rest of the week, maybe a little bit of snow sprinkled in overnight or early in the morning, with temperatures today between 33 and 40 degrees, may get up as high as 44 degrees by Thursday and as low as 32 degrees by this weekend. Currently in the capital city, 33 degrees in the Mendenhall Valley and 36 degrees downtown. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this news update. A Ketchikan City Council member, former mayor, and longtime member of the community there has been arrested on child pornography charges. Jack Shea posted $30,000 cash bail to get out of jail yesterday. He was arrested over the weekend, charged with 10 counts of possession of child pornography. His next court appearance is tomorrow in Ketchikan District Court, and a preliminary hearing is Tuesday of next week. According to a profile published in CIT News last November, the 80-year-old Shea was appointed as the head of the State Division of Employment Security in Juneau in 1983. He served as a member of the Ketchikan School Board, City Council, and Borough Assembly. He's the only person who has served as city mayor and borough mayor at the same time in Ketchikan. Shea is also well known in the First City as a performer as well as a prominent politician. A former Forest Service employee has received 200 hours of community work service and 3 years probation for trying to grow marijuana on federal land, or a sentence of 200 hours of community work service. 37-year-old Jeffrey R. Cox of Wrangell was sentenced in U.S. District Court in Juneau last week. He was charged with manufacturing a controlled substance, a felony, for trying to grow as many as 95 marijuana plants. Investigators say the plants were found in three separate locations on Forest Service land, predominantly around the Rainbow Falls Trail near Wrangell. Most of the plants appeared to be about 6 to 8 inches in height. A Forest Service work crew discovered the plants and spotted a red Audi station wagon driving away that was traced to Cox. Prosecutors say Cox admitted to investigators that he was attempting to grow marijuana in order to use and sell it in Wrangell. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Burgess said the sentence was based in part on the defendant's prior lack of criminal history. Had Cox been caught with 100 plants instead of 95, then his sentence would have been a mandatory minimum of 5 years in prison. The U.S. Army has formally charged an Alaska-based soldier with attempted espionage, issuing false statements and other counts. Specialist William Colton Millay of Owensboro, Kentucky, was charged yesterday through the military justice system. He was arrested October 28th at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage after an investigation by the Army and FBI. Army officials say the 22-year-old never transmitted any information and that he was being observed before any damage could have occurred. Officials say there's no connection with the case involving Army analyst Bradley Manning, who is suspected of disclosing secret intelligence to WikiLeaks. Millay was assigned to the 164th Military Police Company. Most members were deployed to Afghanistan in March, but Millay was in the company's rear detachment that stayed behind. A newly released analysis shows halibut charter catch in southeast Alaska fell within the allocation guidelines for the first time in 7 years. The Halibut Coalition released the analysis based on state and federal fisheries data. Preliminary estimates from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game indicate that 388,000 pounds of fish were caught this year and about half the charter fleet's 790,000 pound allocation. Estimates show the number of fish caught was up 1%, though. The department, in a letter to the International Pacific Halibut Commission, said the average weight of the fishery was down sharply because of a 37-inch maximum size limit that was imposed this year. Final numbers are out for this year's pollock bee season, which closed last Tuesday, and it was a disappointing year for